Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's a website. They got lots of news there. Interesting news. They also have a donate button because you need to keep RBN alive. It is my platform for free speech. If that gets taken away, my free speech gets taken away, and I think that's a big deal. Also, go to nationalbugle.com. There are lots of articles there, and Mark Dankoff and I will be talking about them. But before we get to that, scroll down. You're going to have to scroll down a ways because there's a lot of articles up there. But when you scroll down on the left-hand side, you see the memes of Tulsi Gabbard, because I miss her. And on the other side of the page, you'll see the co-certified button, and you click on that. And there you'll find the co-certified app. You can download it, or you can use it online and lead a non-kosher certified lifestyle. Isn't that right, Mark?
That's absolutely right, and that's becoming more critical, I suppose, in the days ahead as we see all kinds of renewed tribal efforts, both to alter the results of the 2016 election in 2020 and to mess up the economy and to stir up a lot of trouble domestically in terms of Marxist unrest, not to mention the renewed efforts to start another war abroad, maybe two. So we get a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and when people in past years were talking about, you know, Marxism in America, even the term cultural Marxism, I kind of chafed at. But when you look at what's going on, and a lot of the movers and shakers are people who admire Karl Marx, think he was just nifty. You know, that term, you know, Marxism, Marxist revolution, or Bolshevik revolution, it's looking to describe the situation better than I had ever thought it would.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think it's important to understand what I've said constantly to people who do talk to me about this sort of thing on the side in my neighborhood, who are not as old as I am in many cases. Some are older, but I emphasize how much the Democratic Party has changed since I was a boy. The Democratic Party, whatever its liabilities, and I've never been a Democrat, but the Democratic Party in the era of JFK, the Democratic Party going back to the Truman era, certainly, and looking at the Democratic Party of Dick Daley of Chicago, God rest his soul, this was not a Marxist party. I think it's important to see that both on these cultural issues, the Democratic Party has gone absolutely off the cliff on the far left in these cultural issues in my lifetime. But certainly it would seem that with the obvious Democratic support for Black Lives Matter and the way in which the Democratic Party has all of these major governors and mayors in major states and cities that they control, allowing incredible violence to take place and destruction of property because it seems nifty to do so in a 2020 election year. This is not the Democratic Party that I grew up with when there was no Democratic chief executive in my boyhood or any Democratic Congress or Senate that would have put up with this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I was a Democrat in the 1980s, which was a time when the Democrats didn't fare too well, didn't win any elections. There were three presidential elections in the 1980s, and the Democrats got trounced in them all. But you think of the Democratic Party from the 1980s, well, there was a lot of Cold Warriors still. I mean, Walter Mondale, who got crushed the worst of all, was a Cold Warrior, but there were some who were just less Cold Warrior than the Republicans, and Jesse Jackson, who actually I will say Jesse Jackson was the I think he was the out of all the presidential candidates who got into debates in the 1980s, I'd give him the highest marks, at least on foreign policy. He was roundly attacked by the Jewish media, you know, for his association with Louis Farrakhan, but also, well, and then also, of course, he was in a private
the infamous Jaime Town remark,
which was
he made it. Yes, this?
Yeah, in a private conversation, but there was a Washington Post reporter that was party to that private conversation, and it was they were heading into the New York, into New York for the New York primary, and of course he was getting death threats, and he referred to it as Hymietown, and he's never stopped apologizing for that. But he wanted to freeze the military budget. In 84, he wanted to cut the military budget. In 88, he had moderated it to freeze the military budget. He was not going big on the race issues. He wasn't going anti-white. He was saying that Iowa farmers and Michigan auto workers, you know, regardless of their color, that the working people need solidarity. He wasn't going anti-white. And I think in today's Democratic Party, even the Jesse Jackson, we know the Joe Biden of 1990s or in the 1970s would have no part in, there would be no place for him in the Democratic Party. Jesse Jackson of the 1980s would have no place in the Democratic Party, I don't even think.
Yes. So it's a lot of changes, and to me, the most amazing change is to see the flip-flop since the Cold War era in the attitude of the Democratic Party toward Russia. We got a lot of stuff up there about Russia tonight at nationalbugle.com, and the way in which that flip-flop is quite amazing, because it would seem today that the Democratic Party now is willing to blame Russia for absolutely anything. Mm. And Ambassador Craig Murray, that's our first story up on war and foreign policy. It's this one's entitled Cold Wars and Profit. And the ambassador says something that's absolutely spot on. He said if an asteroid runs into the Earth, any surviving press will blame it on Russia. And that's a Democrat-dominated, Zionist-dominated, neocon-dominated media that's doing that.
Except Fox News, some on Fox News might blame it on China.
Yeah, that's right. And so, and that's well taken, because you have a situation there, of course. And Ray McGovern has a story out now on this paranoid policy toward China, which has come out in the last couple of days. I think it appeared at Lou Rockwell, if I'm remembering it correctly. I don't know if we have it up on the big board tonight, but I will get it up there so that people can take a look at it. This whole situation with China is perhaps a different version of the neocon policy toward Russia that's transpiring. And ironically enough, it all seems to be heading in a direction that would have Russia and China and Iran in closer political and economic alliance with one another, which, of course, absolutely undoes the Richard Nixon-Henry Kissinger detente policy, which was designed to make overtures to China and to drive a wedge between China and Russia to the benefit of the United States. And lo and behold, all this time later, we have this situation where clearly with this Iran-China oil deal, you have a circumstance, and I was watching Rick Maxwell of Russia Today the other day on television interviewing the Iranian ambassador to the United Nations. And clearly, when you understand the nature of this deal between Iran and China, it is absolutely to the detriment of what these neocons think they're trying to achieve with their policies. And in this particular circumstance, we might ask, what should they expect? Because when you have the kinds of draconian policies that are going on here, and the rhetoric that's going on here, and the way in which certainly with China and with Russia and with Iran, we have seen an escalation of political rhetoric probably unseen in my lifetime. And of course, in the case of Iran, you get back to this dreadful Soleimani assassination on the 3rd of January. That now seems like 10 years ago. And
It seems like the good old days.
Yeah, it almost does, really. I mean, exactly. That seems like 1,000 years ago, to quote Psalm 90 and 2 Peter 3, verse 8. You know, one day with the Lord is like 1,000 years. In this particular case, the 3rd of January of this year seems like a very, very long time ago. But when you have an American government that is engaging in confrontational policies, and in the case of the Iranian regime, they've resorted to downright criminality. the Soleimani assassination, and I went on record with this in an interview with Tasnim News Agency at the time. This is a violation of American law, it's a violation of international law, and it's a violation of common sense as well, because the blowback from this has not yet really started in terms of what we're going to see. And now, of course, you have a situation where China's stepping into the picture, Russia's stepping into the picture with this Iranian situation, as well as with what the Russians are doing to support the Syrians. And it's really difficult to see how much more incoherent and irresponsible the American foreign policy scene can really be. I mean, it's absolutely breathtaking to watch. And as I said tonight on Twitter, Pompeo was talking about doing all of these various things that were designed to get Iran to return to normal behavior. Barbara Slavin then asked Pompeo, what is normal? Pompeo, to my knowledge, has not yet responded, but then I jumped in and wrote both Pompeo and Barbara Slavin, and I said, well, normal is Pompeo's latest attempts to start a war on behalf of the Zionist state of Israel when he's not supporting LGBTQ in an attempt at causing regime change to take place in Russia.
Right.
And, of course, I flew a picture of the American embassy in Moscow with this LGBTQ rainbow flag there alongside of Old Glory, and I feel that that's well taken. When you see, whether you're talking about assassinating Soleimani, whether you're talking about deliberate insult being perpetrated against a post-communist Russian Orthodox nation, or whether you're talking about these economic sanctions against Iran, Russia, and China, the long and the short of it is that it's most people, if they would stop and think about it, would imagine that particularly with our domestic situation, with a $26 trillion national debt, and with all of this social unrest within our own borders, that the last thing we would want would be to be at loggerheads with any of these countries if it was avoidable, much less a mini Trinitarian alliance, if you want to put it that way, between Iran, Russia, and China. This stuff is just crazy to me.
It is crazy. And with the, the domestic instability here, all sorts of things could happen. When our public, when our government, when our president is distracted by the chaos that is going on internally, it makes it that much easier for those people who seem to have very little or no loyalty to Donald Trump, the people who run our foreign policy, your Mike Pompeo's, your Mark Esper's, to get something started. And it's not just in the United States. You're also having political instability in Israel, which drags us all over the place with you know, Benjamin Netanyahu having only just barely survived four elections in the past year and a half, and there are demonstrations against him. So it's really precarious. Meanwhile, though, Russia, China, and Iran, maybe not quite as much Iran, but Russia and China seem to have plenty of... Well, Russia's got, I guess it's the most domestically stable. China does have those CIA/State Department-sponsored riots going on in Hong Kong, but they haven't spread outside of Hong Kong, to the best of my knowledge. Is anybody, and this is a question, are you finding anybody writing about the potential for chaos due to a contested election in the United States? Because that's been one of my big themes over the past few weeks, is the prospect of a contested election in the United States.
Yeah, and to me, I think that's an absolutely excellent point, Dr. Slattery, because when you, first of all, start looking at what is going on out there in terms of the media, even Russia Today has a story that where, you know, Trump is attacking mail voting again after a suggestion to delay the 2020 election misfires. The RT has a a story out there by suggesting the presidential election can be delayed. Mm-hmm. Trump is flirting with becoming an autocratic dictator and inviting chaos. And, of course, Biden has been sounding this same theme. But really, when you contextualize this and look at the charges and countercharges that go back to the election in 2000, which was the year I was standing for election in the U.S. Senate race in Delaware against Carper and Roth, that whole scene, I can still see it in my mind as I'm leaving Baltimore, where the then Constitution Party was having its national election gala. I left this country club in Baltimore, and I'm driving back to Philadelphia on I-95, and, of course, I pulled over at a place called the Maryland House. You may be familiar with that. It's a very popular truck stop and rest stop for people who are going up and down I-95. And, of course, the radio announced that Bush had won the election. And my wife and I were talking about that in terms of our mutual queasiness with Bush. We didn't like Al Gore either, but my wife and I had met George Bush and Kermit at a gubernatorial campaign event in 1994, and we spent some time chatting with Bush, and Bush spoke to my wife in Spanish, and the long and the short of it is we later talked it through and had the same feelings about him that left us with a very uneasy feeling when it was announced that he had won the election.
I have to ask. I have to ask.
Yes.
Is he as incoherent in Spanish as he is in English?
My wife and I didn't really discuss that. She just had this creepy feeling about him, like she wouldn't trust him. She wasn't particularly impressed either with his intelligence or his sincerity. And so I can honestly say that. The other thing, of course, going back to 2000, as you well remember, is when a handful of hours later, when I was back in Philadelphia, lying in bed after an exhausting campaign in Delaware that had gone on for months, I then started to hear these stories about the election being contested and that the state of Florida was the focus of this contesting of the election between Bush and Gore. Well, that, of course, was years ago now, mm-hmm. and as heated as it seemed to be at the time, the whole thing is quite tepid by comparison to the state of this country now. We are, this is what you're sensing, Dr. Slattery, when I was a boy, very much involved in keeping up with the whole political scene at the age of 13. My dad was in the Air Force. I followed the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago every night, including what Dick Daley's boys were doing to these demonstrators. And as rabid as all of that was at the time, and of course, as you know, that same year earlier gave us, sadly enough, the King and RFK assassinations, it was an incredibly heated situation that nonetheless, I don't think, was as dangerous as what we are facing now. There was still a resilience in the country, and I think a sense on the part of many Americans who were on both sides of the Vietnam issue that ultimately, with the exception of, course, this radical left element who later became quite significant in infiltrating our educational system, mm-hmm. That's another issue. But nonetheless, at that time, America ultimately prevailed. It was not destroyed. We're in a situation now, and Mitchell Feierstein has a story up there from RT that we put on National Bugle. The title of it underscores, I think, where you're coming from on this, and that is that, quote-unquote, this is a critical point in U.S. history. We've entered a dangerous, chilling period that could lead to a race or civil war. I have an excerpt from the article itself that is up there, and I think Feierstein is absolutely right. Mm-hmm. When you see the former president of the United States at a funeral for a deceased black Democratic congressman and the previous president of the United States is using that as a forum to attack the current president of the United States.
Well, let's talk about that when we get back from the break.
Sure.
Make the world go away and get off my shoulders. Say the thing. say.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Did you know that you can be tracked and traced when you're online? With identity theft and cybercrimes on the rise, your passwords, your identity, and even your physical location can be revealed to complete strangers. Would you like to surf the internet anonymously and not have to worry about these threats? Well, now you can by visiting patriotinternet.com. For about $2 per month, patriotinternet.com will conceal your IP address and your physical location, allowing you to browse the web, send emails, and instant message anonymously. Patriotinternet.com will bypass filters, block sites, and keyword blocking. You can also bypass logging by your router and your ISP. With patriotinternet.com, there is no software to install and uses 128-bit encryption for your protection. When using wireless hotspots, patriotinternet.com shields your information from identity thieves and is compatible with Windows, Mac, and Linux. Protect your identity and your freedom with anonymous internet access from patriotinternet.com. Visit patriotinternet.com today.
Welcome back to the show. So, yeah, when you compare what could happen with the 2020 election to the 2000 election, you can say, yeah, 2000 was a contested election. It was contested because it was genuinely very, very close. And there's a big difference. There was a lot more trust in the electoral process in 2000. It's just that Florida, which with its... how many electoral votes did it have at the time? 21. It had a decisive number of electoral votes, enough that it made the difference. And Florida was seemed to have been divided by about 500 or 600 votes, and so every vote counted. It was just one of those things where it was just a very, very close election. That's why it was contested. This election, it has nothing to do with it being close or not. First of all, there's very little trust in the electoral system now, much less than there was 20 years ago. But also, the means that, in particular, the Democrats are willing to go to in order to overturn elections, and this, you know, we have a good example from their efforts to overturn the 2016 election, which are ongoing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they will pull out all of the stops. And, you know, when Al Gore, in mid-December, when the Supreme Court, which I didn't really think the Supreme Court really operated properly. I don't think they really had the proper jurisdiction. But basically, they came down on the side of Bush. and that settled Florida. And with Florida settled, Al Gore conceded. He just conceded. And in fact, you know, I've talked a lot about how in 2016 you had these in when they were counting the electoral votes in the Congress to certify the election, you had all of these spurious challenges to Al Gore to Donald Trump's electoral votes, saying, "Well, there was Russian meddling." Well, in 2000, you had a few, you had a little bit of that, but who was presiding over the counting of the votes? It was Al Gore, and Al Gore was having none of it. So,
yes,
I think there's a big difference.
I think there's a huge difference, and what we are seeing now, of course, is a redoubling of Democrat efforts. And this, our big board is at nationalbugle.com is full of such stories. How this whole issue of Russiagate and Ukrainegate seems still to be a part of the renewed vigor of the Democratic Party to delegitimize 2016 and to suggest that if there is a result in 2020, despite the fact that they currently have a 15-point lead in the polls, supposedly, but if Donald Trump should pull another surprise and win again, the Democratic Party is fully ready to take this business of Russia interference to the next level, even though there was absolutely no proof for it up to now, including the fact that the Mueller investigation of $32 million was a complete flop. Now, this gets into something that I was going to mention just off the big board, nationalbugle.com. AP had a story, and I subsequently posted a video of my own on Twitter to mock these people, but the Associated Press is quoting unnamed U.S. intelligence sources, sound familiar, mm-hmm. about the so-called Russia spreading virus disinformation. Now, the original AP story, curiously enough, had the names of these websites, the locations of these websites. When I double-checked this tonight to get it up on the big board, the versions of the AP story had excised or eliminated those websites. But Snopes continued to mention these websites, and I have since checked them out here. So we have up on the big board tonight this AP story quoting unnamed U.S. intelligence officials, who never lie, of course, that Russia is spreading virus disinformation. I had to laugh at that, thinking about all the misinformation that Fauci, among others, has put out on this virus. But nonetheless, in that story, U.S. officials on Tuesday, it's just 2 days ago now, singled out a news agency, Inforos.ru, Inforos.ru, that operates a trio of websites. The one I just mentioned, something called Infobricks.org, which is a reference to the BRICS Economic Organization, Infobricks.org, and OneWorld.press. The U.S. intelligence officials say that the Russians have leveraged the pandemic to promote anti-Western objectives and to spread disinformation through these sites. Two Russians who have held senior roles in Moscow's military intelligence service, known as the GRU, have been identified as responsible for a disinformation effort directed at American and Western audiences, U.S. government officials said. They spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity, because they were not authorized to speak publicly. The information had previously been classified, but officials said it had been downgraded so they could more freely discuss it. Officials said they were doing so now to sound the alarm about the particular websites and to expose a connection between the sites and Russian intelligence. Now, my own video mocking this thing out is also up on the big board, but I find it interesting that one of the things that really has Biden and the Democrats frosted mm-hmm. that
and we've got about 20 seconds.
Sure. The Democrats and the deep state are really upset about all of this because InfoRus has run a story on Biden and Ukraine, and maybe we'll get back to that.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Any time you're feeling lonely, any time you're feeling blue.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You say you want me back again. That's the time I'll come back home to you.
And welcome back to the show. So I understand that InfoRus, they do more than spread misinformation on the coronavirus. They spread disinformation on Joe Biden?
Yeah, I sent InfoRus's article on Joe and Ukraine to Joe and said, you know, Joe, I'm really glad that AP has discredited this site along with unnamed American intelligence officials, because otherwise people might think that you're a real crook. But Joe hasn't responded, but I did send it to him.
Why hasn't he responded? It's not like he's busy doing anything else.
His lawyers are probably responding to what will be his indictment after the election, whether he wins or loses. But here you have, in this Ukraine gate business, the InfoRus story. I've got enough of an excerpt there. I'll let the listeners read all of it. But Giuliani has presented another batch of scandalous revelations about corruption in Ukraine and the culpability of former Obama Vice President Joe Biden. This is a 40-minute video that Giuliani put up on the Internet. And according to Giuliani, most of the foreign aid to Ukraine, worth $5.3 billion, was stolen. $3 billion of that came from the U.S. And Giuliani is alleging that Biden and George Soros and the last three ambassadors to Kiev, Jeffrey Payet, Marie Yanovovich, and William Taylor, are apparently involved in this as well. So this is an interesting story coming to us from a site that, of course, the Democrats in the deep state are now attempting to discredit InfoRus and these other two sites, InfoBricks.org and OneWorld.press, because of what they say is biased information. Now, of course, this is utterly ridiculous in terms of the fact that the American media is one of the most controlled in the world. And in terms of biased information, if it's biased, let the American people, in terms of what they read, make up their own minds as to whether or not it's biased. And when you look at the number of really reputable people in our movement, ranging from E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars, of course, to a number of others, including you, Dr. Slattery, who have, had YouTube accounts taken down and things of this sort. The bias of the mainstream media and the bias of the high-tech social media folks is incredibly obvious. And so one could well make the case that these Russian sites that we have mentioned tonight on the air are in fact less biased, perhaps, than what we're fed every day in mainstream media and on Twitter, YouTube, Google, and Facebook. So that's where we are there. Just mention that one in passing. And then maybe to get back to what you, I think, had wanted to discuss in more detail here in this 18-minute segment, and that is Mitchell Feierstein.
Yeah, and just before that, you know, you mentioned those three ambassadors to Ukraine, one Jeffrey Pyatt, who was on the receiving end of Victoria Nuland's F the EU statement.
Yes.
And then the next one, Marie Yovanovitch, who, you know, she testified before Congress during the initial impeachment inquiry in the House of Representatives. And we were all told that if you didn't side with this great American patriot, foreign-born American patriot, Marie Yovanovitch, in her policy fight with Donald Trump, if you didn't side with Yovanovitch's trying to overturn Donald Trump's policy, so well, then you're just treasonous. So, but
yeah, and this is the same Yovanovitch who was marching in openly as the American ambassador to Kiev at that time in these LGBTQ parades as a means of getting at the Russian Orthodox Church in facilitating the deep state's attempts to engage in splitting the Orthodox Church in Ukraine and elsewhere, trying to diminish the historic role that the Russian Orthodox Church has played in Ukraine as the legitimate ecclesiastical overseer of the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. So this is all a part of this picture. And when we start discussing the backgrounds of these folks, this Giuliani video, which I have not seen, would be incredibly interesting to view. Perhaps we should look for it and get it up on the big board if it's out there.
Okay. So, yeah, and Yovanovitch, she was Jewish and descendant of Holocaust survivors. And now this, Feierstein article. Now, he sounds like, I looked a bit at that article, and of course it sounds like a Jewish name, but he's making a lot of points. Of course, he is not always using the same terminology as I would. He's seems to be avoiding mentioning Jewish power, but
yes,
he is talking about some of the real threats that lie ahead. So what about that article?
Well, just very quickly, I would say that Andrew Carrington Hitchcock's criticisms of RT are well taken in terms of the fact that RT was less than fair with David Icke. Is that how you pronounce David's name?
David Icke?
Icke, yeah, I-C-K-E. And then the other thing, RT, unlike Bousman's Russia Insider, which is very candid on the Jewish issue, unlike Father Joseph Gleason's Russian Faith, that is similarly candid when it's appropriate to be, RT shies away from that, and someone by the name of Feierstein is not likely to cross that border either. But nonetheless, Feierstein's got two up here on the big board at nationalbugle.com that I really think are worth taking a look at briefly. Feierstein says in the first article, "This is a critical point in U.S. history. We've entered a dangerous, chilling period that could lead to a race or civil war." And if one looks at that particular article, Feierstein does an outstanding job, I think, of showing just how unfair and how stacked the deck is with the Democratic Party and mainstream media in the United States and having any degree of honor or fairness when it comes to Donald Trump. And in this particular case, we put up an excerpt of this article, which talks about the controversy over school openings. Feierstein says that there's not one documented case anywhere in the world that identifies a child as transmitting COVID-19 to a teacher, but that doesn't matter. Trump wants to open the schools, so it must be a bad idea. The party of science, quote-unquote, is willing to dismiss COVID-19 facts if it will help them win the election. Why do teachers want schools closed? And this is the key thing here. 71% of teachers voted against Trump in the 2016 election, and less than 10% of college professors are conservatives. And so when you go through and read this entire piece, it is clear that when schools are closed, sporting events are closed, other large gatherings are canceled, except for anti-Trump riots, looting, and arson led by Antifa and Black Lives Matter, we might suspect that there is something wrong in this scene that was not true even in 1968.
Yeah. Regarding the professors, when I was teaching political science, I had conservatives flock to me. Now, I was somebody who had been, you know, a Ralph Nader and former Jesse Jackson supporter. The conservative students were flocking to me. Why? Because I just allowed them to express themselves. And, you know, and I have to say, I learned a thing or two from some of them. It was very interesting. And I was not aware that other professors, and not just in political science or social sciences, but even in hard sciences, how they were stifling free speech. And, you know, one of my students was an aspiring and eventual airline pilot, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but he had a science professor try to overrule something that he was saying about aerodynamics for political reasons. I don't know. It was all pretty crazy. Okay, well, where are we going next?
Well, let's mention two other things that pertain to Russia. One is Feierstein's second article. It's entitled "Al Capone Would Be Proud: Chicago is the Corrupt, Crime-Infested Murder Capital of the U.S., A Glimpse of a Dystopian Future." And the thing that, of course, Feierstein emphasizes here is that the Windy City is suffering record levels of shootings and homicides, yet its leaders, like all Democrats, are bowing to the mob and seeking to defund the police. It's insanity, but it's all aimed at toppling Trump. Anything can happen, especially in a presidential election year in America, but Feierstein says that the Democratic Party leadership in America has coordinated a well-organized and funded, quote-unquote, resist-everything cabal designed to terrorize Americans and impact the outcome of the November election. And when you read on in this whole thing, it's absolutely amazing how spot on I believe that he is, and how frightening it is in this country that you have a major party, in this case the Democratic Party, involved in the promotion of this kind of mob violence, this kind of Marxist terror. And these are Marxist folks. These are not good liberal Democrats of the early 1960s. These are out-and-out Marxists and anarchists on these streets that in Chicago especially, secondarily looking at Portland, looking at Seattle, looking at Albuquerque, looking at Minneapolis, and looking at Washington, D.C., and so forth and so on. A contested election, getting back to what Dr. Slattery was talking about earlier in this conversation, a contested election this year. In the context of this kind of violence, this kind of rhetoric, and this kind of out-and-out hatred that I think we would be amiss if we didn't term it that, because that seems to be a fair description of what it is. This is a level of instability in the United States that I think has never been seen before in this country's history.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go back to the Civil War and then who knows? I mean, I wasn't living through that. And distrust in the electoral system, and I think on the part of, say, Republican partisans, the distrust is probably warranted on the part of the Democrat partisans. It's fantasy. What's fanciful? But you know, Russia. So who knows?
Oh, there. Oh, we have a little time.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I thought it was important to put this up on the big board. We have a letter that I came across today. It is a letter written by the Russian, or the Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church in Moscow. This is Patriarch Kirill, K-I-R-I-L-L. And, of course, among many other things, he has his ROKOR, Russian Orthodox Church, outside Russia. And that is the banner for the Russian Orthodox churches that are operating in this country. Kirill wrote an open letter to the governor of California, Mr. Governor Newsom, and it is a fascinating letter because it is so absolutely candid in terms of what Kirill says to him. I'm sure for reasons of time, well, I won't be able to read the entirety of this, but this is dated June 8th. It is an open letter to the Honorable Gavin Newsom, the Governor of California, from His Eminence Kirill, Archbishop of San Francisco and Western America, in light of the decree issued by the Governor of California that forbids choral singing in churches. And as you read through this, basically, the Archbishop, the Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church in Moscow, Archbishop Kirill, says to the governor of California, he reminds him of the way in which the Russian Orthodox Church was subjected to persecution during the years of Soviet rule. Many Russian immigrants and their descendants comprising the Russian Church abroad came to the United States of America and other countries overseas in order to freely confess their Orthodox faith, to freely perform divine services, to observe the feast days, the fasts and all the customs established by the Orthodox Church. In this manner, says Archbishop Kirill, they followed the example of the founding fathers of the United States of America, who sought the possibility of freely confessing their faith. Now here's where you get into the fascinating thing here. From the very beginning, says Archbishop Kirill, to the governor of California, the very beginning of the current global outbreak of the coronavirus, the clergy and faithful of our diocese, desiring to preserve the health of the population and stop the spread of the coronavirus, and respecting those in power, rigorously strove to adhere to all the standard norms and restrictions introduced by local health authorities. Even though they were deprived of the reverent divine services of Great Lent and the joyous celebration of the triumph of the Holy Resurrection, our parishioners were sympathetic to our directives, attending our churches, quote-unquote, virtually. Now, this is the key thing here. However, we must now observe a contradiction in that mass protests take place everywhere, in which absolutely all precautions are violated with impunity. Yet liturgical singing performed during the divine services and while observing all of the rules is forbidden. This is open discrimination, says Archbishop Kirill to Governor Newsom of California. It is open discrimination, hypocrisy, and the infringement of our religious rights, prompting us to recall the era of godless persecutions in the USSR, unquote. That kind of says it all.
It does. Gavin Newsom, by the way, his first wife, Kimberly, I guess you say Guilfoyle,
yes.
Who is now cavorting about the country with Donald Trump Jr.
I met Ms. Guilfoyle and I met Donald Trump Jr. in passing when they came through San Antonio. My 99, then 98-year-old mother wanted to see them for some unknown reason, so I took her down to the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center in San Antonio, and I said hello to Ms. Guilfoyle and hello to Donald Trump Jr. That was about the extent of our interaction, yes. But she was married to Governor Newsom.
How about that? So you never know.
Oh, you never know.
Okay, we are up on the break in about a minute. Do we have a quick story before the break?
Yeah, the Ron Campia story from the Times of Israel is entitled LGBTQ Rights Group Names Longtime Israel Advocate as Its Director. This also comes to us via the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, a Washington byline, and it basically says that an LGBTQ rights group has named a longtime Israel advocate as its leader,
Imagine our shock.
Yeah, amid increasing criticism of the Jewish state from the left. A Wider Bridge is the name of this group. They announced the appointment of Ethan Felsen, formerly executive director of the Israel Action Network, on Monday. The network is the Israel advocacy arm of the Jewish Federations of North America. Felsen is a longtime leading pro-Israel professional with roots in Jewish community outreach to other minorities. So the Zionists are being increasingly concerned about the criticism they're getting from the left. So they're reaching out to this gentleman whose name is Ethan Felsen, representing something called a Wider Bridge, to get out there and to shore up their support among the far left.
Yeah. So the far left, if they're going to start talking anti-Israel, then the Jewish power structure has to parachute their own people into the leadership of those groups.
There you go.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back.
Well, in 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met up with the British near the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept...
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Couldn't catch 'em down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
And we are back, and we have to remember that with all the corona, like the corpses piling up in the street from the coronavirus, with the Only Black Lives Matter riots, there is this other very important story going on, which is Ghislaine Maxwell and the Mossad domination extortion, compromising of our elected politicians. So what about that?
Well, we have three stories listed. under at nationalbugle.com under coronavirus and other news. This is where the Maxwell thing comes in. From Film Daily, did Ghislaine Maxwell run one of the biggest Reddit accounts? Editorial comment there said this is really interesting. Whitney Webb from The Last American Vagabond has one up, the Maxwell family business espionage, and she, among other things, gets into the Promise software scandal, which I know quite a bit about because of my past work with the late Gordon Thomas from many years ago. But suffice it to say, read that article because you may well find out what really happened to the late U.S. Senator from Texas, John Tower, who perished in a mysterious aviation accident that certainly I believe that Gordon Thomas believed was related to Promise, to the Promise software scandal, to Robert Maxwell, and to Tower's own sordid role in all of this on behalf of the Israeli Mossad. So take a look at that story.
Do you think, well, okay, so that he would have died, what, 1989, 1990, something like that?
So it was right after, he was, of course, this
he had the Tower Commission.
Yeah, a lot long after he did not get confirmed as George Herbert Walker Bush's Secretary of Defense.
And, you know, that was before Jeffrey Epstein's operation was going, but one presumes there might have been similar kind. Do you think he was compromised in some salacious way?
Epstein himself?
No, Tower.
It's possible. Now, I have a late friend, a very, very close friend, no longer living, who knew a great deal about John Tower because of my friend's father's prominence in the state of Texas in the financial community. That's about all I will say. I learned many things about John Tower, none of which were good. And in terms of this whole business of Tower and possible compromise based upon his personal behaviors, I've never been able to zero in on anything definitively involving Tower and women, per se. But I guess his prolific drinking habits were the areas that were used to deep six his nomination as the Secretary of Defense.
Hmm.
And curiously enough, there's another angle on this, too. We'll never know. But John Tower's aviation death and the aviation death of U.S. Senator John Heintz of Pennsylvania were 24 hours apart. Now, what are the odds that two U.S. senators would die in aviation accidents 24 hours apart?
I don't remember that being them so close together. Yeah.
Yeah, they were 24 hours apart, folks. You really have to wonder.
Yeah, and then, of course, Heintz's widow wound up marrying John Kerry.
Yes, Teresa Heintz, and this is all very interesting when we look at this as outsiders to the American political elite and try to come to our own conclusions as to just what these folks are up to. True Pundit, this is the other Epstein story I wanted to mention. Jeffrey Epstein's private banker at Deutsche Bank and at Citibank was found swinging from a rope, an executive quote-unquote suicide before the FBI questioned him. So this guy's name was Thomas Bowers. He was the chief of Deutsche Bank's private wealth management division. He worked from the bank's Park Avenue offices in New York City. At Citibank, he served as the chief of the Citi Private Bank and previously ran Citigroup's global markets and wealth management businesses. And when Bowers left Citi for Deutsche Bank, Epstein followed him.
There you go. Well, yeah. There's a lot going on. Thank you for all the work that you're doing, helping us sort through all of this. And I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendivite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendivite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-877-877.
1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.